Get ready to get blitzed on the Blitz podcast at thehuddle.com with your hosts Steve Gallo and Harley Schultz.
Welcome back to another episode of the Blitz podcast. Not just another episode, but actually almost like the quarter mark, believe it or not. Yes, that is right. We're hitting our stride right now in the NFL fantasy football season. And of course, I can't do it without my co-host, Harley Schultz. Harley, how are you doing?
Well, you know, everything's going pretty good for me here. I did bang up my finger a little bit this weekend, but otherwise, you know, it's the quarter mark in the proverbial lengthy race around the track, and I've always been thought of as more of a length horse rather than a speed horse. So I think if I'm going to succeed this week, I'm just basically setting myself up to succeed more as we get closer to the final stretch.
So what you're saying is you're just pacing yourself to get to the finish line at some point.
That, and also I'm overweight and can't run that fast anymore.
Yeah, there you go. I feel you, man. I feel you. Trust me. So, it's going into week four. What we know, what we don't know, still feels like it's crazy. Still can't believe we're a quarter of the way. Yeah, they go and they add an extra game, really screw us up. So we're not really quite a quarter of the way through the season, but we're a quarter of the way through the season because week 17 is useless for the most part now, right? So we get 16 full games if we're lucky. In any event.
Well, and we also get our first dose of games in Great Britain this week.
Yes.
I know you love those early starts on Sunday morning.
I am not a morning person, and even if I were a morning person, I still would not like 9 a.m. football games. Just not happening. Come on.
Well, I mean, we talk about when teams travel from the West Coast to the East Coast to play an early game.
Yeah.
That kind of throws them off. Well, at least when they're traveling to play in London, they leave a few days early, so they can marginally set their clocks back, but It's still got to be a huge just gasser for the players in general. I mean, it's probably not as big of an impact as the Thursday night games following a Sunday night game or a Sunday even afternoon game, but it can't be good for their circadian rhythms within their bodies.
Yeah, they're fine-tuned athletes. They'll just have to figure out a way to get by. That leads me to, you know, what we'll talk about this week. Of course, we're going to have our DFS segment, like always, right? Our PSVs, pay-ups, stay-aways, and value plays. And I think we're going to do a segment on whether we need to shake it up or shake it off. So I guess it's going to be about, you know, are you a Cars person or are you a Taylor Swift person with where you are with your lineups?
Well, and I'm sure there's a few players on both of our rosters that we both agree maybe we're never going to get back together with.
Yeah, that's not a problem. We definitely can say that. There's a lot that we could talk about. However, speaking of Taylor Swift, and I know I've got DeAndre Swift in at least one league. I'm sure a lot of other people do. I'm not sure. He probably might make the news, and if not, then we'll talk about him after the news. But that means before that happens, of course, I've got to throw it over to Harley for this week's Blitz podcast news.
Thank you, Steve. Rob Gronkowski is already fueling rumors that he may be ready to unretire yet again after he was spotted at the Packers-Buccaneers game on Sunday. If he is going to return, we all have to hope that his mom can find his game pants again and that he hasn't grown out of them by eating all of those Subway sandwiches. Coach Dan Campbell suggested that DeAndre Swift could benefit from missing some time over the next couple of weeks as he recovers from an ankle and shoulder injury. You know, that's funny, Dan. Swift's fantasy owners think that he could benefit by you not pulling him in the red zone every game. Both Delvin Cook and David Montgomery left their respective games with injuries last week. Fortunately, it sounds like both will be able to go for week four. As an owner of both of them in the Scott Fish Bowl, I would like to go on the official record with the following quote. Whew. Mac Jones will miss the next few games with a high ankle sprain. With this news, we can now finally fully recommend going out and using your waiver dollars to purchase Patriots skill position players. And finally, the NFL announced today that they have replaced the Pro Bowl with a flag football game. So, in other words, nothing has changed. This has been your BPN News Update.
All right, that was a good one. So, you know what? I didn't cut. I just kept going along, kept plodding along. You're sitting here talking about, you know, setting the pace, and I got horse racing on my mind, and I said the Blitz podcast news, which I guess is kind of fitting maybe. I don't know. Hey, something I didn't mention earlier, speaking of plodding, which makes me think of horses, which makes me think of animals. Tank is making picks this year. You know that, right?
Yeah.
He is 8-5 after the games yesterday, going into the Monday night game. He has, I believe, the Giants tonight.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's always a risky play. Although, I mean, Dallas is still playing with Cooper Rush at quarterback, so there's a chance. And again, who would have thought at this point in the season that the Giants would be undefeated?
Yeah, that's true. The Giants didn't think that. He had a bad Sunday. He was 7-3 going into yesterday. He unfortunately went with the Washington Commanders, and he also had, I believe, he had the Buffalo Bills.
So those. I can understand the Buffalo Bills. Obviously, they were definitely favored, and a few interesting calls went against them, and things just didn't work out for them in that game. But I mean, Washington choosing them to beat Philadelphia—that was a really a stretch of a pick there for Tank.
Yeah, you know what? It was in Washington. And listen, here's the deal: for people, they're probably thinking, "Oh, Steve sets it up so he gets on the pick who he wants." I don't let him see me when I put the treats behind the helmets. Okay, if anybody's seen it on Twitter, they see that I've got him sitting, and then I let him go, and he goes and he. The first treat he eats behind the helmet, that's the team he picks. Well, he actually went to the Eagles helmet. And then he said, net. And he went over and ate the Washington one and then went back and ate the Eagles treat. So, yeah, he had a chance and he just went the wrong way. I don't know. In any event, I'm curious to see how he makes out for the year. That's for sure.
Well, considering the lack of success some of us have had, he might actually finish with more wins than others of us. I know that the huddle.com has a weekly segment on their site where we pick the winners both on the money line and against the spreads. So listeners that may not have visited that particular article, I think it comes out typically on Thursday mornings.
Yep.
You can see who we predict for each game each week. And you can kind of compare those numbers against those of Tank's and let's see who does best by the end of the year.
So I'm having a stellar year, by the way. I do my picks against the spread going into this week. I'm 20-13 and I believe that I've got, yep, the most wins amongst all the huddlers. And then against the money line, I have 22 wins and 10 losses. I'm leading there also. But my wife is in an office pool, and she's actually leading in her pool also. She had 21 wins after 2 weeks, and now she's got 9 this week. I think she's on the Giants tonight also. So she's at 30 wins. She'll definitely be in first place after 3 weeks still too. So we should bet more in this household, I guess.
Well, you can from where you're at. Here in Minnesota, we still can't do the full-on internet sports betting, but fortunately the state of Wisconsin and the state of Iowa are both 45-minute drives from the Twin Cities here. So if we want to make any bets that aren't offshore, we can do those still by making a short drive. But obviously, I don't have to do that for Daily Fantasy because Daily Fantasy is legal here in Minnesota, which for the states that don't have that yet, boo hiss. Just get your act together and legalize it.
That's right. Legalize it like everything else you can make money off of. Just do it. Okay, so let's get into our first segment, and it would have been a good segue to get into DFS, but we're going to wait. Make people wait for the best, I guess. Let's talk about shake it up or shake it off. What do we mean by shake it up or shake it off?
Well, let's put it this way. Let's say this is the third week here. This is going to be the fourth week coming up. What are you supposed to do if you're in your redraft leagues and you started the season 0-3, or based on the matchup coming up, it looks like you might finish 0-4 or at best 1-3 coming out of week 4. What can you do at this point, or what should you do at this point to better your chances. Again, assuming this is a redraft format and not prepping to make trades to help yourself from a dynasty standpoint, which we will talk about later this season. But if you're sitting at that 1-3 mark or 0-4 mark after this week, or even just 0-3 or 1-2 at this point, what are some moves that you can make to better your chances this season?
So I think the first thing you have to do, and I think you have to look at it no matter what your record. So you're 3-0, you're 2-1, you're 1-2, or you're 0-3. I think you have to look at it and assess them on all sides, quite honestly, because you could be 3-0 with smoke and mirrors, just happen to get good matchups, right?
And 100% totally true.
And if you look at it and you go, wow, I really am lucky to be 3-0. I should be 1-3 or 0-3 possibly. You know, I just really pulled each one out and I got lucky who I pulled as my draw. Then you may need to make the same types of moves for somebody's 0-3 versus maybe that 0-3 team, they're the second highest scoring team every week. And they just pulled a bad draw. So you have to look at that from a contextual standpoint, I think. But for the most part, you probably are what your record says you are, right?
Yeah, and I'm obviously underperforming and injuries have played a small role this year. I feel like it hasn't been as big of a role. Now, most of the time we say most of the time we talk about how there's like, oh, there's so many injuries. Oh, yeah. This is like the worst injury year ever. We just keep looking around. It's like the ghosts of injuries past come and hit us. And this year just really doesn't seem like there's been that much. And obviously,
yeah, thank you.
Minor things this week, but
everybody, you can send your emails to Harley at heruinedityforeverybody.com next week. Man, you're just really just pushing it, aren't you?
Well, but again, the big thing that we have to take away from that is that there are a lot of underperformers this year. And I think that is a crucial element in this. Again, my team is Scott Fishbowl. I took the element of heavy running back to a whole nother level, drafting running backs in each of the first four rounds. While everyone else was picking quarterback number 20 by round four, I waited until round 10 to get my first quarterback. And it was Carson Wentz, who for the first 2 weeks at least was very, very good. And obviously this past week he struggled some, but I put together a decent enough stable behind him, guys like Geno Smith and Jacoby Brissett, who have been adequate second guys for me so far. But again, it's like if you went heavy running back early this year, even if you just had a first-round running back in general, most of those first-round running backs have really underperformed. And again, I mean, if you were fortunate enough, you got Cooper Kupp, Jamar Chase maybe in the first round, you're probably feeling a little bit better. Justin Jefferson had a huge week one, but he's been kind of quiet the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So in general, the first round players have underperformed, but they've kind of underperformed across the table.
Yeah, I'm one of those Justin Jefferson guys in Scott Fishbowl. I shouldn't even say this. Barring a stat change or negative plays by Noah Brown tonight, I'll go to 3-0. I'm currently at 168-10 to 166-40. And that was with having a Justin Jefferson in my lineup, a Miles Sanders in my lineup, a Sky Moore in my lineup who got me negative points, and a Darren Waller who got – so all those guys scored under 7 points. But I got a good matchup, and I'm 3-0 more than likely. I benched Justin Fields. Smart play. I got lucky. I benched Jacoby Brissett. I probably shouldn't have. However, I played Hurts and Geno Smith, and Geno outscored – Brissett by a couple points. So I got lucky on some of my plays. James Robinson's coming through big for me. Christian Kirk, we talked about him last week. Devontae Smith had a monster week. David Njoku, who you know I've loved and liked, you know, preseason. So it just sometimes the matchups work for you and sometimes they don't. There's some other leagues I'm in that are a little bit, you know, thin. But anyway, what I will say is there's some leagues where I have guys like DeAndre Hopkins, Will Fuller. I don't have any OBJ, but I considered him late in some drafts. If you're 0-3, 1-3, or you know you should be, you're probably best to look at ditching those guys to get some upside on your roster.
Yeah, in the cases of Odell Beckham, we've heard all season that he could sign at any given point. But if you look at the medical recommendations for him based on when he was injured, they were saying he'd probably be out until late October, early November. Now, obviously, Odell Beckham is not your standard human being, so he probably will be ready before then. But again, you're still waiting. And then let's say once he does sign, he's probably going to need a week or two to get comfortable with the offense he signs with, short of returning to the Giants or returning to the Rams. But it's tough to call. And with Hopkins, obviously, it's kind of the same thing. He's suspended, so he can't even go to team meetings and stuff until week six. So you're sitting on him for another couple weeks with no return whatsoever. Michael Gallup was supposed to come back for tonight's game, and they made a decision mid-afternoon here to not have him play this week. So, again, if you drafted Michael Gallup as a potential sneaky wide receiver three, a guy that might slide a couple of weeks and then get him in there, well, he's still not playing yet either. So these guys, I mean, you drafted them thinking that you were going to start the season really hot and you'd ride into their return and then just be a boost for your offense. Well, slap upside the head. Here you are, 0-3, 1-2. You still have those guys on your team and you're still waiting for them. You really have to consider at this point thinking, okay, I need a win this week. I'm going to trade one of those guys to a team that's probably overperformed to start the season and maybe get some guys who can definitely help you win this week just to get you over that hump. Again, I'm not saying selling them for pennies, because you don't want to sell them for nothing. But just remember, I mean, if you don't get the win this week and you're staring down the barrel of 0-4 after this week, it's going to be hard to turn that around.
I would say if you're 1-3, you could probably try to sell and not get pennies on the dollar. If you're 0-3, you probably can look at actually dropping them if you have to, if there's somebody on your waiver wire that's worth attacking. Another part of shake it up is, let's say you have a James Robinson or a Saquon Barkley or a Josh Allen or a Lamar Jackson, maybe even a David Njoku while he's, you know, hot or something like that. You can also look at trying to flip those guys. They've got value, they deserve the value, and that's how you can help to, you take back a slightly lesser running back to help bridge some need at wide receiver or something like that. That's the shake it up. They're the hard ones to do, but sometimes that's what you have to do.
Yeah, and again, it's never too early to start looking at strength of schedule, particularly from the playoff time. If you have started 3-0 or if you are projected to start 4-0, you can start looking at those playoff weeks and say to yourself, well, okay, so-and-so is on a bye week 14, or so-and-so is running back is facing the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in week 15. Is this something where I want to get away from this particular matchup and maybe look to turn that player for a comparable or upon paper, maybe a downgrade at that position, but to get you a better matchup down that string. And again, for listeners going to thehuddle.com, they do have a rest of season schedule feature that typically starts, I believe, around week 5 or week 6 out there.
So the other thing is, talk about shake it off. If you're a Justin Jefferson owner and you're 1-3, you're probably like, you know, regretting that you went wide receiver early with him or something, right? I think that's where
I don't think anyone that went wide receiver early is really sweating it too much this year right now based on how the running backs have performed. But
yeah, true.
Yeah, again, I mean, Jefferson's had a couple of down weeks, but really hasn't been his fault.
Right.
In his case here, they're learning a new offense. It's a more rhythm-based offense, and there's a certain degree of comfort level with Kirk Cousins as far as getting that rhythm down, because Kirk Cousins has always been more of the receiver gets himself to his position and then he throws it, whereas Kevin O'Connell's offense and the Sean McVay offense tree in general has been more about timing-based, where it's like Cousins will drop back and he's throwing the ball to a location and the wide receiver is supposed to be at that location based on X number of counts. And again, that's a game that certainly Justin Jefferson's capable of doing, but over the last 2 weeks he's been locked down, first by Philadelphia, who used Darius Slay predominantly to shadow him, and then this past week with Jeff Okuda, who's developing into quite a shutdown corner in his own right for Detroit.
Yeah, so, but the key is, if you're 1-3 with a guy like Justin Jefferson, you can shake that off. You know he's going to perform.
Yes, definitely. Like, he's a guy that you can safely count on for 8 to 10 catches, over 100 yards, and a touchdown a week. And that's going to be his averages by the end of the season. Guys like that, Travis Kelce, the other first-round running backs who have struggled so far this year, Christian McCaffrey, Jonathan Taylor, these guys, you know they're going to be consistent by the end of the year. So if you've got them on your roster and you've started slowly, those are the guys you can kind of shake it off to, because you don't have to worry too much about them getting theirs in time.
So speaking of Christian McCaffrey, I'm going to segue a little bit, because I don't know that it fits into the shake it up or shake it off category, but everybody wants to call Baker Mayfield the wide receiver killer. He killed OBJ, and now he's killing DJ Moore. But what the hell? He turned Christian McCaffrey into Nick Chubb.
It's ridiculous, actually. And I think one thing that we've noticed from watching Baker Mayfield during his early season's development, first with the Browns and obviously now with Carolina, is that he likes to maneuver around in the pocket a lot. He likes to bootleg out to his right a lot. And what ends up happening is McCaffrey in the previous regimes would catch a short pass right away. Like basically he would line up, he'd do like a quick run to the right, quick run to the left, and throw directly to him. He didn't really have a lot of setup passes for McCaffrey. It was more like just get the ball to him and let him do his thing. Baker takes so much time running around in the backfield trying to get stuff going that by the time he finally ends up having a play take effect, either with him running out of the backfield or throwing the ball, McCaffrey's kind of like done his route and he's gone into a secondary route. He's just not getting the attention. And again, I think that's mainly because Baker is more active in the backfield.
I mean, this year, McCaffrey has 57 receiving yards through three games. Last year, he played in, what was it, six games? Yeah, he played in six games. He eclipsed 57 yards four times. And the fifth, he had 54 yards. So it's like, and he had over, he's got 10 total receptions right now. He had not 7, 9, and 10 in three games of the six last year. Yeah, it's, I'm a little concerned about Christian because, well, you know,
and
his
the
upside
biggest thing
is
he's not even getting the targets.
Right. Yeah. No, I didn't even talk about that. My goodness. Yeah, he would, what, he had 41 targets in six games he had basically. So you do the math there, over six a game. This year he's looking at what? He's got 14 targets and 10 receptions. So, yeah, it's horrible. And that's where the upside comes from. That's why people were taking 1-1 overall ahead of Jonathan Taylor at times, because you get that 1.5 running back due to the receiving ability of him. In any event, I think you probably shake it off with McCaffrey if you're an owner of him also. I do think that they have to wind up straightening up, and they know that he's one of the biggest weapons that they have. And I also think DJ Moore will be fine too. I wouldn't mind targeting Moore if you needed wide receiver three help. You probably get him a little bit cheaper than what you should at this point.
Well, and again, in the case of Moore, you can go to the owner and say, hey, look, this is DJ Moore. He's now had three different quarterbacks. He's always been the same situation. He'll go, he'll catch five passes, maybe 60 yards, and he never scores. You go and tell him that, they'll probably sell him to you for the price of a wide receiver three. And officially, DJ Moore always finishes every single season just outside wide receiver one status. He's always a high-end wide receiver two by the end of the year. But his numbers always look so pedestrian on paper that it seems like he's not doing that well.
Yeah. By the way, tonight's game, I know Dallas is on the doorstep. 42 is the number we need to see in points scored. 42 or more points. That's what my wife needs to cash out in her pool.
I don't like those odds.
Yeah, I know, right?
This looks like an under game here.
Maybe we need a mid multiplier for it or something like that, right?
Exactly.
In any event, talking about multipliers and scoring, we might as well just go ahead and transition over to our DFS time frame. What do you think?
Sounds good to me.
All right, pay-ups, stay-aways, and value plays, PSVs with Harley and Steve. For those of you that don't know, Harley and I do not discuss any of this in advance. Harley's going to set an over-under, and we'll see, and I'll guess if we're going to hit it one way or the other. So go ahead, Harley. Where are we at this week?
I'm going to go with five this week, and my reasoning being is that there's two fewer teams playing in the main slate thanks to the London game between the Vikings and the Saints. So there's a little bit fewer players to choose from this week. And also, there's some low ball games. There's some dog games coming up this week. So I think that we're going to have some pretty easy matches.
I got to take the under. I hated, once I got to wide receiver, especially tight end, I hated the choices. I'm going to take the under.
Okay.
And I'll put it this way. I'm going to still feel comfortable even if we start off 3-0 at quarterback. But go ahead and tell me, who are you paying up for a quarterback?
I'm going to pay up for the most expensive guy on the board, Josh Allen. Baltimore is absolutely rotten against the pass. They've allowed 168 more passing yards than the next worst team through three games. Plus, you know what? Buffalo's got some pieces missing in their secondary right now, which is going to turn this into a shootout. I haven't seen the opening line yet, but if it's any, if the opening line is anything under 80, I'll bet the over.
Yeah, there you go. So we don't have a match. I did look at Josh Allen, but I like somebody in his range a little better. And you know me, if I'm going to pay up and can save a few dollars, I will do so. And it's not Lamar Jackson, who's got like back-to-back 40-point fantasy games. It's actually Jalen Hurts at home against Jacksonville. That offense is clicking, and it's a home game, and you know, they got Doug Peterson coming back from, you know, he's the guy that brought them their first Super Bowl. I just think that the atmosphere there and the way that you got Devontae Smith is clicking, they got Goddard involved, you got A.J. Brown, you know they can run the ball, and you know Hurts can run the ball. I'm going to pay up for Jalen Hurts. I did think if I was going to pay up higher, it was Allen I was going to buy instead of Lamar, though.
Yeah, I think for me the decision was that their prices weren't that far different. If it was a $600 savings or a $700 savings, I might have done it. But, I mean, they're only $200 apart on DraftKings, only $300 apart on FanDuel. I also have to admit, I was somewhat impressed with how Jacksonville's defense has looked so far this year. And, again, I'm not saying that Jacksonville's defense is going to stop the Philadelphia offensive machine this week. I think that Philadelphia still does well. But I think that they could cause some fits for Jacksonville, especially with that pass rush.
So you know what
would cause some fits for Jalen with that with the pass rush?
They could. Carson Wentz played pretty well against them in week one, though. And that was on the road for Jacksonville. So you know me, the tiebreaker, when I'm torn and don't know who to go with, I'm usually going to go with the quarterback that's playing at home. Allen is on the road, coming off a tough loss. That's what I like. But with Hurts being at home, that was the tiebreaker for me.
One thing I did not address in the Buffalo at Baltimore game, and again, this is still early in the week. We're recording on Monday. We don't know what, if any, effect Hurricane Ian will have on East Coast games this week. I know that they have already talked about plans if they have to move the Kansas City-Tampa Bay game. And again, we don't know if Ian's going to get that far north or not. But if it does, could be issues there. They might have to look at moving that game possibly. And or if there are weather conditions in that game, it could affect the passing offenses of both Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think you remember. I was on the radio down in Tampa for quite some time, so I've got a lot of Twitter followers from the Tampa area. So my thoughts and my prayers and all go out to all my followers down in that Tampa/Florida area. Yeah, they're supposed to get – they're like them in – I think it's Sarasota or them in Fort Myers look like they're in the red zone of where they could really get hammered. Even if it's not winds, there's going to be a lot of storm surge. So let's hope that it doesn't work out that way.
Definitely.
So who are you staying away from?
Well, I think this one was pretty easy. I'm going to stay away from Kyler Murray for the second week in a row, by the way. A West Coast team that has to travel east and take on a solid pass defense, not a great pass defense, but a solid pass defense in Carolina. That doesn't really give me a lot of trust for Murray here. You know, Winston, he got a few yards against them last week, but no quarterback has thrown for more than one touchdown against Carolina so far this year.
So we have a match. I wound up going with Kyler Murray, but I want to say that I had Lamar Jackson written down first. And people are probably like, why? Well, because I feel like you can pay up for Hurts or Allen if you want to, right? The fact that Buffalo's coming off that loss, and I know they lost quite a few defensive players, so that's the other thing that made me go, no, I'm not going to stay away from Lamar Jackson. I just – they have a penchant that they could turn it up defensively, and I just for some reason feel like that they could make Lamar struggle. But I, at the end of the day, everything that you said about Kyler Murray made him a much easier stay away than Lamar Jackson.
I have to say this. The pure football fan in me – is so looking forward to watching Von Miller chase Lamar Jackson around the field next week.
Yeah. Yep. So value play wise, my God, I had a hard time with this. This is where it started to go south.
Definitely a hard time on this one here. I went down near the bottom of the pricing structure. I went with a guy that I actually used a few lineups this week for success. That's Geno Smith there at Detroit. I don't love the fact that it's on the road, but it's in Detroit, and is obviously not going to have any weather conditions there. Detroit has, as I mentioned earlier, one shutdown quarterback in Jeff Okuda, The rest of their pass defense though can really be picked on, as Minnesota showed this past week. That while they're shutting down Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen and KJ Osborne both had good games, and Irv Smith, the tight end, actually would have had a good game, but he dropped like six passes. So I'm going with Geno Smith. Geno is actually seventh in the league in completions right now. That's kind of absurd to me. He's just completed a lot of passes. Although the problem is those passes have all been really short because he's only accounted for the 20th most passing yards. So if your league rewards completions like the Scott Fishbowl does, he obviously has a little bit more value there than he does in DFS from that standpoint. But again, you're paying $5,400 for him. Both sites have finally upped their axiom so that they're going proper prices to some of these mid-tier guys that we've been using as value plays up until this point. Guys like Wentz and Goff and Carr, even Trevor Lawrence's price now is up close to $6,000 on DraftKings and the mid-sevens on FanDuel, which again, these guys were all priced in the low fives, low sixes up until this week, so you could really take advantage of that. Now that the prices have updated, you kind of got to dig a little deeper for the value.
Yeah, and you know what? You know something's up in Seattle when Tyler Lockett has 9 catches but only total 76 yards.
I was going to say, he's had games where he has had 1 catch for 76 yards.
Yeah, I was going to say, 9 catches, Tyler Lockett, you're thinking, oh, he's got to have a buck 60 or so, right?
Exactly.
And 2 touchdowns or 3 and, you know, whatever. So I went bottom of the bowl, scraping the stuff off of my shoe. I went with Davis Mills at home. And I like the Geno Smith play, by the way. I had Geno in an actual redraft lineup this past weekend. So, yeah, I don't know. I just – maybe it's me being blinded by – I expected Davis to have a solid season, solid plus season this year. I believe that you saw Damian Pierce start to run the ball well this past weekend. Brandon Cooks is due for a breakout, hopefully. At 5,000 and 6,400 – 6,400 I don't love. The 5,000, he's going to give you some options. Nobody's going to be on him at all. If the Chargers struggle, maybe it's a lower scoring game, but if the Chargers can put some points up, then you know he's at least going to have some garbage time. There's just, I don't know. I was shocked to see him priced below Mitch Trubisky, Brian Hoyer, Zach Wilson, Baker Mayfield, Mac Jones, Justin Fields. Justin Fields, who, by the way, has like 14 completions on the entire freaking year, I think.
I mean, let's put it this way. At this point, I'm shocked that DraftKings hasn't gone full Chris Davis on Justin Fields and priced him at like $900 and like tried to like convince people to play him just based on price. I mean, they did that hysterically with Chris Davis a few years ago when he was in that stretch of like 0-for-60.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for the moment when they finally do that to Justin Fields' price tag, but it hasn't happened yet. Davis Mills at 5,000 is a serious, serious misprint this week. For some reason, his numbers didn't get changed. I think maybe the algorithm thought they were actually repricing Davis, was it Woods or Wells is the other? Yeah. Davis Webb is the other Davis that's quarterback.
So the other thing, I tweeted out yesterday, through 3 games, I think the number was 23. Justin Fields has 23 completions. There were like, I don't know, somewhere around 8-10 quarterbacks yesterday that had more than 23 completions in their week 3 game.
Again, you can kind of throw out that first game because of the wicked weather in Chicago, but there's no excuse for the last 2 games.
Hey, you know what? And they're 2-1, tied for first in their division. They're a prime example of the whole shake it up or shake it off. If that's your team in fantasy, you're not really 2-1. You need to shake it up.
Exactly.
All right, we got one match through the quarterback position. Let's head on over to the running back spot. And start us off with who you're paying up for at running back.
You know, I'm going to pay up for the highest priced guy. Once again, that's Jonathan Taylor versus Tennessee. I never thought I would live to see the day where Taylor was 8,800 on DraftKings and less on FanDuel, 8,700 on FanDuel. Oh, my God, that's screaming. You've got to play him there. Tennessee is allowing just under 150 combo yards a game to opposing running backs. And they're allowing a full touchdown per game to opposing running backs. So, you know what? This has got to be the week Taylor finally breaks through.
So we have a match for all those reasons. Yeah, his price, he took a double take at it. and they're at home. Yeah, they got a win, a good win against Kansas City that they probably shouldn't have got. It just, yeah, I think that we see they continue to feed him this week. So I like him. Who are you staying away from?
I'm going to stay away from Derrick Henry in that same game. I don't particularly hate Henry here, and I know Henry's had success historically against Indianapolis, but Indy's for this season's only giving up 2.5 yards per carry.
Yeah.
And that's kind of concerning. Whereas Henry, if the general league is getting 2.5 yards per carry, he'll probably get 3.5 yards per carry against them. But that still means he's going to have to carry the ball 30 times to reach 100 yards.
Yes. And on top of that, he's going to have to continue catching a lot of passes like he did this past weekend, which was kind of shocking.
That was nice, actually.
Yeah. So for what it's worth, he's not who I'm staying away from, but I don't disagree with you. I'm actually staying away from Christian. Baker Mayfield killed my fantasy value, McCaffrey, because at 87 and 8,800, I need to have that receiving ability. Like, I'd rather pay up for Derrick Henry knowing that maybe he'll get 5 more catches and then you're happy. But 5 catches for Christian McCaffrey doesn't cut it. Not in DFS. So I'm not saying it's a horrible matchup. But until we see that, you know, reception upside, I'm steering clear at the price he's at.
Exactly. I think the value play is pretty easy this week. We talked a little bit in the news about how the coaching staff is talking about holding out DeAndre Swift. Assuming that that is indeed the case, Jamal Williams versus Seattle has to be the value play this week. Only one team is allowing more than the 170 combo yards per game that Seattle is giving up to opposing running backs. You know what? If Swift's out, yes, we'll see maybe a few touches for Craig Reynolds, but 95% of the carries and touches are going to go to Williams this week if Swift is out. And he's done good against much, much more tougher defenses already this year.
I believe he has 4 total touchdowns on the season already. Go find a ton of combos of like 6 or 7 different players, and you'll be hard pressed to get 4 total touchdowns with them. And Jamal has more. I don't hate the play at all. Actually, it's a very strong play, but I went cheaper. I don't have as much upside. There's no doubt. I don't have as much upside. But I went with JD McKissick, and the thought was, if you look at the week he had this week against the Philadelphia Eagles, who logged 9, not 7, not 8, but 9 quarterback sacks, okay? Mm-hmm. Dallas and Micah Parsons can bring it better than just about anybody in the league. So I think Dallas is also going to have that game plan wrecked to where they've got to do a lot of dump offs to McKissick and Curtis Samuel. So I think McKissick is a safe value play, not a lot of upside. You're probably getting 12 to 15 points from him, right around that 3x mark. If he gets pay dirt, that's all gravy. But that's why I picked as my value play this week.
And I actually do kind of like that too. One thing to look out for, though, is that in the case of this past week against Philadelphia, the passing offense pretty much had to go through McKissick and also Curtis Samuel, because James Bradbury and Darius Slay had shut down both their outside receivers, Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin. Although McLaurin did end up with a decent final line for the day. But I was actually a little more surprised that Logan Thomas didn't do more in that game.
Yeah.
Because again, the one thing, you can beat Philadelphia underneath against their linebacking core. And so if McKissick gets that same sort of opportunity against Dallas, I don't know if it's going to be quite as necessary as it was last week, but I do think he's still going to have a decent line.
Yeah. Like I said, he's one of those safe value plays, not a lot of upside, but he's not going to shut you out. All right, so we've got 2 matches through 2 positions. Let's head on over to the wide receiver spot and see what we can do here.
You'll notice a trend. I'm paying up for the most expensive wide receiver, and that is Stephon Diggs at Baltimore. We've already talked a little bit about how I think that game is going to be huge scoring. And here's the thing. Over the last 2 weeks, Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, and Devontae Parker have combined to post this line: 27 catches, 517 yards, and 4 touchdowns against this defense. These guys are not good. They're not good at all. Josh Allen and Stephon Diggs are just licking their chops at what they're going to do. I'm pretty sure what they're going to do to Baltimore's secondary is felonious in 48 of the 50 contiguous United States.
Yeah, I was going to say, so we matched there. I picked Diggs also. That average of 517 is over 170 yards per game. So, yeah, I think Diggs eats this weekend in a big way. There's, like I said, they've already given up three 150-plus yard games to three different receivers. So Diggs fits right in with those profiles too.
So as far as stay away goes, I thought about doing the obvious pick, which was the next highest price guy, Devontae Adams, based on his usage. It's kind of been a little weird the last couple of weeks, and going up against Denver and Patrick Surtain Jr. But I decided to not take that route here. Instead, I went down the pricing ladder a little bit, down to the 10th highest priced guy on DraftKings. So not really a super high priced guy. I mean, he's still 6,600 on DraftKings. He's 7,600 on FanDuel, which I believe would make him 6th highest priced on FanDuel. So he does have that pricing differential there. I'm going to stay away from Christian Kirk this week. And here's why. You know, he's been electric all season, but as we were just talking about, that Philadelphia secondary is really, really tough. He's going to face off against either Bradbury or Slay, probably get the Slay ride. That's not something that you want to count on for your number one receiver. Trevor Lawrence looked great against the Chargers this past week. He's coming down to earth this week.
So we almost had a match, and you would have put me up against it because I have Devontae Adams as my stay away. I get the Christian Kirk thing. I honestly do. And you want to know what makes the job of Slay and Bradbury even easier is when that pass rush is getting home like it is. Man, those guys are just going to be that much tougher if that pass rush in Philly can continue to do like they did this past week.
Well, I'd like to say, I mean, you guys, you're a Philly fan, I believe. The interior defensive tackle that they got in the draft this year.
Yes.
My God, what a beast he is. How did he fall that far?
Yeah, he was a steal for him. Best player available, and I'm not usually about best player available. I like best player, but at a need. He was a great
Jordan player. Davis, I believe, right?
Jordan Davis, yeah. Yes.
I was all over Jordan Davis to a couple teams before him in in our mock draft season this past spring. Oh, my God. After watching him play against the Vikings a couple weeks ago, that guy is going to be an absolute beast to deal with for years.
Yep, he is. Look, they've had Fletcher Cox in the middle of that defense for God knows how long, and he's nearing the end of his career. They've got a guy that's stepping right in and might have more upside. In any event, I stayed away from Devontae Adams. He is at home, and yeah, it's like you don't know what you're going to get. It's been really up and down with that offense, and as they sit 0-3, but it's more than that. They're playing a Denver team where Debo Samuel's 73 receiving yards are the most that they've given up to any receiver this year. Outside of Debo, they haven't given up more than 58 yards to anybody. Sure, Devontae Adams could have that much in one quarter, definitely in a half. But I can't pay that price for a woulda, coulda, hope he does it.
And along those same lines, I mean, obviously Denver's secondary is pretty good. But don't chase Mac Hollins' points this week, particularly if Hunter Renfro is back.
Yeah, no, don't do that.
I used Mac Hollins as a great value play this week, and he won me a lot of money because of the fact that he was going to take over all those snaps, and I thought he would be a decent option to get access to that game without paying up for Devontae Adams. And obviously, he paid off big time when Hunter Renfro was out. And yeah, don't chase those points this week.
Yeah, is there anything worse than when you call a guy that you're expecting to have a big game and he goes out injured and then his backup comes in and just blows up kind of like
Davis Montgomery?
Yeah, I was going to say exactly. I had Monty as my value play last week, and then you see what Khalil Herbert did and you're like, oh, what could have been?
Oh, Khalil Herbert just absolutely dominated. Let's put it this way. I actually did really, really well on the early slate. I would have absolutely crushed the early slate this past week if Montgomery had gotten credit for all of the stats that Khalil Herbert got in his place.
Yep. All right, so who's your value play at wide receiver?
You're probably going to say this guy isn't a value play, but he is my value play. I'm going to take Gabe Davis at Baltimore. You know, Davis had a quiet first week back from injury, which should curb his ownership numbers a little bit. I think people might try to get cute and do a triple stack with Isaiah McKenzie this week, coming off a big game last week. But, you know, take advantage of that recency bias and the potential low ownership and Voltron stack this game. I'm talking Josh Allen, Diggs, Davis, and run it back with Mark Andrews.
So, no, I don't hate it. You know me. I like when we put little twists in there like that. You know, I almost, you know, could have said that I was going to make Josh Allen my value play when I went with Jalen Hurts as my pay-up at quarterback, right?
Yep.
So the logic behind my value play has something to do with your stay away, actually. I've got Zay Jones as my value play. He has quietly been putting up solid numbers through the first 3 weeks of the season. And with Christian Kirk getting locked down, I think we see Zay make some noise out of the slot this week. Enough noise to make him a solid value play when he's only $4,200 on DraftKings. A little higher at $5,900 on FanDuel. But yeah, that's what I told you. I started to like dislike this whole slate after about running back. You know what I mean?
Well, I think that's the way to attack Philadelphia's secondary is through the slot or through guys coming out of the backfield. And certainly that is where Zay operates predominantly with Marvin Jones and Kirk on the outside. So I definitely like that strategy. And again, we did it a little bit last week. People were asking me, it's like, well, should we start Curtis Samuel? It's like, yeah, go ahead and start Curtis Samuel. He's not going to get shadowed by either of those two guys.
Exactly. By the way, my eyes are hurting right now. They're bleeding. I think I'm going blind. I just looked at the TV, and I see Jason Peters in a Cowboys uniform. Yes, I know he signed there, but, oh, man, there's just some things that are sacrilegious, and that's one of them. Anyway, okay, head over to tight end. We've got three matches, so you set the over at 5. We need to sweep it to hit the over. Well, actually, I'm sorry, 2 of 3 to hit your 5. We need to zero out basically to not have to worry about it. Don't worry about my math.
Well, to continue my trend, I am paying up for the highest priced guy on the board, and that's Mark Andrews versus Buffalo. I already mentioned the fact that I like to do the massive stack in this game. And you know what? This game's going to be a point orgy. So give me the guy who's the biggest threat for scoring in Baltimore's offense. Currently, Andrews leads all tight ends in every single significant offensive category. So you know what? I mean, Buffalo, I mean, pick your poison here with the exposed defensive secondary replacements. Either someone from the outside is going to have to come inside and try to cover Andrews, or they have to cover him with backup interior defenders, like the interior safeties. I don't like his chances. I mean, maybe they are able to shut down Rashad Bateman like happened last week with New England, but I think Andrews is still going to be in line for a 680 and 2 touchdown type of game this week.
Well, you're a little more sure of him than I am. I actually initially wrote down no one. I didn't want to pay up for anyone. But I defaulted to, I picked a guy and I went with Mark Andrews because I'm not paying up for any of those other guys. Not happening.
That is seriously the truth.
All right. Who are you going to stay away from? Go ahead.
I'm going to stay away from Zach Ertz. Now, Carolina has allowed the second fewest targets and the second fewest receptions to the tight end position, the fourth fewest receiving yards to the position. And Ertz has certainly been involved in the offense a lot during these first couple weeks here without DeAndre Hopkins. But they've already been talking about getting Trey McBride, the rookie, involved a little bit more in their offense. So I think as the season progresses, he's going to start seeing a few more snaps that might take away some of those targets from Ertz. And again, just not a great matchup on paper. I've already told you that I'm staying away from Kyler Murray. So, I mean, if I'm going to go after anyone in the Arizona offense this week, it might be Greg Dortch, whose price is still pretty low at wide receiver.
Okay. So we don't have a match. I don't disagree with it. I looked at it and I wrote down, I'm staying away from Darren Waller. I'm staying away from Kyle Pitts. I'm staying away from Zach Ertz. I wound up staying away from Waller. Okay. Simply because he's the next highest guy on the chart. It was going to be Pitts, but with Cleveland losing Anthony Walker for the season to that injury he suffered, I'm not sure how that's going to impact what they do and give up to the tight end position now. So maybe Pitts winds up being a solid play. More targets this week. Still didn't do as much as you would have expected with the amount of points that they put on the board, though. Anyway, yeah, staying away from Waller. I guess I'm staying away from the Vegas offense in general this week.
Yeah, I don't like the price tag, say, for Waller. I did kind of look at him a little bit, and when I did some more research, it sounds like Denver has been a little bit forgiving to the tight end position so far this year. But yeah, again, the price isn't great there. It's a
stretch to get three
again,
times.
If you're going to spend that much money, you might as well spend the extra $400 on DraftKings for Andrews.
$400? $1,500?
Oh, 1,400. I misread my numbers here.
That's okay. That's okay. Who is your value play at tight end?
This was hard. Again, a lot of the guys who I liked have started to get their prices bumped up a little bit. Guys like Gerald Everett, David Njoku, who we've used before, Tyler Conklin, who's off to a ridiculous start, but who's going to come back down to earth now that Flacco's going to be leaving the nest in a couple weeks here, or within this next week. I went down the list. I looked at Robert Tonyan possibly against New England, but I ultimately settled on a guy much cheaper, and that's Austin Hooper at Indianapolis. Indy's eighth in receptions allowed to the tight end position, sixth in yards allowed to the position. They've also given up an average of one tight end touchdown per game so far. I like Hooper to have a 550 in one game this week.
So we don't match the under hits. Yay me. my value play, I thought you were going to nail him. He is a little more expensive than what we normally would put for a value play. Actually, I think he's like the fifth or sixth highest player on the board on FanDuel, but it's David Njoku. He's going to be there week in and week out, and he's got plenty of upside. I do like his price much better on DraftKings than I do FanDuel.
That's a $2,000 difference between the two sites there, but that just plays into the fact that FanDuel, as far as their tight ends goes, I mean, if you want to get a value on FanDuel at tight end, you have to go down to the $4,500 to $4,800 range. And that price would be the same as getting your Zach Ertz, your Dallas Goedert, and Pat Freiermuth on DraftKings. So I always recommend, if you're going to play on FanDuel, you might as well pay $5,600 for Freiermuth rather than $4,800 for Will Disley.
Yeah. Now, if you want a cheaper guy and you're not going to go Zay Jones in the Jacksonville Eagles game, you might want to look at Evan Engram, because we know that Philly has had trouble over the years at times with the tight end position. And if they're not going to eat on the outside, then there could be some room for Engram to have one of those, you know, 5 for 70 in a touchdown, or 6 for 70, 75 in a touchdown type weeks.
Yeah, and a guy that, I mean, really haven't talked about a whole lot this year that makes for an interesting play, I would say this week is, I can't find his name now on the list here. Janu Smith, who for whatever reason has kind of outperformed Hunter Henry so far this year.
Yeah, what's up is down and what's down is up. We can thank Stranger Things for that, I guess.
Exactly, the upside down.
The upside down, yes, we are in the upside down. All right, that's it, my man. Good week. I don't like the slate this week. I just don't. If you're not a degenerate, that means that you don't have to play if you don't like it either. Right? That's the wonders.
Exactly.
That's the wonders of DFS. No one's forcing you to play. But we help you out in case you do want to play, try to tell you what we think you should do. But at the end of the day, it's your decision, your winnings, your losses. You don't have to send any of your winnings to us, and we're definitely not going to take any of your losses.
Although we do accept it.
That's true. That is true. We need to set up a GoFundMe, right? Or something like that.
Exactly.
Why not?
A Patreon.
Yeah, that's it. Or what is it? Zelle. Give me Zelle. I saw that stupid commercial the other day. The guy's trying to give somebody cash. No, Zelle me. What?
Well, that's better than me. I'm in one of my fantasy leagues this year. It's a redraft league that I've been a part of for about 30 years now, one of my longest running leagues. It's run by a bunch of old fuddy-duddies that don't want to, like, they refuse to even look at PPR as a change in stat category.
Oh, God.
Well, in that league, they refuse to take electronic payments, so they make us pay by check or cash every year.
Oh, my God. I think I write possibly one check a year, and that's usually to the IRS, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, wow. Still get
Shout out to John Gilbertson and Steve Mattson if you're listening out there. Love you guys to death. Love the league. Been a part of it forever. I'm never going to leave, even though, like I said, the rules are outdated. But you guys won't take electronic payments for stuff. Means I actually have to break out the checkbook at least once a year for that.
Send them a box of pennies or something.
Yeah, give them the oil-soaked bag of pennies. Like there was some news story recently about somebody paying a former employee that was disgruntled in pennies.
Oh, God, yeah. I think Kobe pay off, or Michael Jordan pay off a bet with like a pallet of pennies or something like that once?
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I don't think we take pennies at the huddle if you want to sign up, but don't let that keep you from signing up. And, of course, you can follow Harley on Twitter at Nuclear Harley. You can follow me at Steve Gallo NFL. And, of course, sign up at the huddle to get all our great content we have so we can help you move towards winning a championship this year. And the weather has broken, or it, I guess that's what you would say. It's cooler out. It's crisp out. You know what that means? It's stout time. It's all those good heavy beer times. But whatever you do, make sure that you get blitzed responsibly. Cheers.